In The Neverending Story by Michael Ende, there's an exciting chapter called The Three Gates, where our brave hero Atreyu must face three magical, mysterious gates on his journey to save Phantasia from a terrible force called the Nothing. But these are not ordinary gates. Each one is symbolic and filled with danger and an incredible, mysterious challenge. The first gate was called the Great Riddle Gate. As Atreyu approaches the Great Riddle Gate, he sees it guarded by two enormous golden sphinxes. These sphinxes are terrifying and beautiful all at once. Their eyes glow with power, and they sit still as statues until someone tries to pass. Then they come to life, staring into the heart of the traveler with their piercing gaze. They know everything about you, your thoughts, your fears, and even if you're not truly brave. Atreyu stands before the gate, his heart pounding in his chest. Many have tried to pass, but those who weren't honest or brave were instantly destroyed by the Sphinx's terrible eyes. But Atreyu, with his courage and strong will to save his world, steps forward. He knows he has no choice to be brave, so he takes a deep breath, and he makes it through the first gate. The second gate is called the Magic Mirror Gate. In the Magic Mirror Gate, it's not just any mirror. This one shows not your face, but your deepest self, all your secrets, your fears, and who you are truly inside. Many who face the Magic Mirror turn back, terrified of what they see. Atreyu steps up to the mirror, not knowing what will happen. But instead of seeing his own reflection, he sees something completely unexpected. A boy. A boy sitting somewhere far, far away reading a book. The boy is none other than Bastion, a human from the real world. Atreyu doesn't understand what it means yet, but he knows there's something special about Bastion, and their fates are somehow linked. With that thought in mind, he steps through the mirror, ready for the final test. The third gate is the No Key Gate. When finally Atreyu reaches the No Key Gate, the trickiest one of all, he sees that this gate has no lock, no door, no handle, nothing. It cannot be opened by force or even by a spell. The only way to pass through is to completely forget you want to get through it all. How odd. Atreyu stands before the gate, puzzled. How can he cross if he isn't supposed to want to cross? It's like a riddle. But Atreyu has come so far, and his heart is full of trust. He stops worrying about getting through and just lets go. And guess what? The moment he forgets his desire to open the gate, it magically swings open on its own. Atreyu has passed the third and final test. The symbols of nature, the nature of symbols. Have you ever felt lost in life? Questions that are hard, or maybe can't even be answered, seem useless to some. But on the flip side, also the path to enlightenment. I hope you can open your mind to doing some mental stretching in the next minutes, allowing that controlling, knowing it all part of yourself to ease up and enjoy the ride. An important tool, essential tool of the philosopher, the life traveler, and the awakened mind is to grasp the deep link between the material and the spiritual realms. The concept of reality as symbolism can open doors in your mind you did not know were there to be opened. Consider the possibility that reality is structured by symbols and patterns. Each element of existence reflects deeper meanings, the paradox of oneness and duality. Everything in the material world seems separate, yet it is interconnected at a fundamental level. Perception shapes our experience of reality. It is our lens for interpreting both the physical and the metaphysical aspects of life. Nature provides one of the most powerful tools for understanding symbolism and understanding existence, with the Tree of Life being one of the most universal. Found across all cultures, the Tree of Life represents growth, the reflexive and dual polarities of reality, and the cycle of life. Ancient Egyptian symbols, like the Neter and the Eye of Horus, reveal myths about natural forces and cosmic order. The god Mat, who weighed your soul with a feather, shows balance between opposing ideas. Time, death, and life are interconnected in these symbols that all reflect the harmony and the dissonance between human beings in this life that we are experiencing. Sacred geometry is the basis of this symbolic understanding. Shapes like the triangle, the square, appear in nature and spiritual traditions. The circle, the hexagon, these shapes are intermingled in an understanding of both left brain mathematical computations and more right-brained feelings of flow and recognizing larger patterns. The toroidal field and the Fibonacci spiral show that math governs both the physical world and the metaphysical systems. The golden ratio appears in nature's designs. Seashells to galaxies, even when the proportions of the human body reflect in these same mathematical equations. These geometric principles link the material and the spiritual realms. They show a deep connection and reflection between form and function. Fractals. Look at things like the Mandelbrot set. Expand your mind on this idea. Inside of every pattern exists other patterns. These are constant discovery we make of pre-existing forms and symbolic representations that the nature of reality and the reality of nature reflect within itself. They show that infinite complexity can exist within a realm of finite structures. Fractals are self-similar. They show how reality mirrors itself at every scale. This is seen in the growth patterns of trees and the flows of rivers and in the shapes of food and the organs of our body. Pythagorean math underlies many of these patterns. It shows the number and geometry are the building blocks of both physical and the metaphysical realities. Ancient civilizations like the Egyptians and the Greeks used these principles to model the universe and model their world and their structures. Many people knew that universal laws govern reality. By studying these symbols from nature, by understanding the geometry and the commonality in ancient spiritual traditions, we can see that reality is somewhat flexible, but it is also material, and it is also symbolic. We can better understand the unity of both worlds, the physical and the metaphysical. To do this, we must discover patterns and symbols that structure existence. So these symbols are the links, the keys, and the doorways that invite us to see the universe as a reflection of itself. The smallest details mirror the grandest cosmic principles. Reality is a web of connected symbols. And join me to reveal the deeper truths about life, growth, existence, death, and natural law. Welcome to the Nature of Symbols, the Symbols of Nature. Hi, my name is Chris Jansen. I'm with the End Evil podcast. You can check out my work at endevil.life or chrisjansen.com.
Hello, friends. This is Chris Jansen. Evil is the destruction of freedom.
Draw your attention to a couple great things you can check out when you're done watching this show. Pop on over to Twitch and check out Brandon Spencer's 24/7 live stream coming at you with truth, freedom, natural law, all the time, every day. Also want to bring your attention to Mondays. You can check out my good friend Crip Rick on Revolution Radio. at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And now, I have a great show for you. Thanks for joining me. Please stop on by to andevil.life and make a small donation or share something from the website. Subscribe to the channels and enjoy the show.
Welcome, friends. My name is Chris Jansen. This is the End Evil Podcast. You can check that out at endevil.life or chrisjansen.com. Get on the email mailing list so you can stay in the loop. And we have a Telegram chat. And you also might want to check out the One Great Work Warriors and the One Great Work Network. Mark Passio's whatonearthishappening.com. And many other folks, awesome content creators out there teaching natural law. Today we're talking about the nature of symbols. I've been on a multiple part series working with folks on teaching and understanding symbols and the study of symbols, symbology. And in that process, one thing that I have learned a lot about myself is the symbols of nature. And the codes and the structures embedded in nature that help us realize the importance of what we're doing here. And the story I started out on this episode with one of my favorite movies, The Neverending Story, is a great story because it reminds us of many of these concepts. It reminds us of the reflexive nature of reality and the fantastical nature of the ability of our mind to imagine things, and where we fit in all that everything, and where the nothing fits in all that. So what do we care about in this world? You know, doing something, doing nothing, and when is it the right thing to do something, and when is it the right thing to do nothing? You know, that's kind of what we're here to work on and figure out. The relationships we have with other human beings, the choices we make in our day-to-day life, all play into this grand scheme of the quest of our life, which is the symbol in the story, the never-ending story. Our hero in the story is given the Arin, which is a twisted snake biting its own tail in an infinity design that we will discuss further. But if you haven't read yet this book, The Neverending Story, I highly recommend it by Michael Ende. But it tells of a fantastical world, and this boy who's reading the story gets sucked into the adventure of the world. And like if you've followed our recent episodes, we've discussed the zombies and the way our world and our nation has become a lot of people who want to just sort of do what they're told and follow the orders and live in their lowest base desire or their lowest brain functioning. And so this presentation and these ideas are meant to inspire you to look at the grandeur of this world and some of the amazing aspects of nature and come to recognize the incredible potentials, incredible potential that we humans have to grow, to learn, and to resolve some problems in the world and to evolve our spirituality and our mental capacity and perhaps even our physical abilities. All this can happen. And much of it can come through going through these doors of perception, through understanding things mentally is the process that we need to do before we can start to physically change things in the world. Any good thought leads to a better idea, which then leads to action in the world, which can become real things. One of the premises of my work is that each of our soul's yearning, desire, is to find the adventure of our own hero's journey, to write the story of
what we're here for. In other words, the destiny is not laid out, but part of our job as beings in this realm is to help figure that out. You know, I have a quote somewhere in Alan Watts, you know, and he discusses us being a part of God, but we are also God itself, looking at itself, almost as if the great all, the universal creator, got a little bored in the history epoch of time and decided to fractionalize itself so it could get a better look at itself. And we are sort of that reflexive mirror in this world, living out our own never-ending story inside the bigger story of the great all. So, you know, in some ways, our body can become a trap if we do not treat it well. Our physical form, we use it to do actions in this world, and if those actions we choose do harm to others or nature, there is always a causal effect to everything we do. And so sometimes we experience the culmination of a lot of actions we and other humans have done leading up to this moment, which causes a lot of confusion and misery and sorrow. And this is natural law working its way out. Reality, the universe, life itself is here to teach us lessons. And it is all lessons within lessons. And what we're going to find out in this presentation is just like Atreyu's walk through the three gates, that we are also on a journey, an adventure, just like Atreyu. And those of us who choose to take this adventure consciously and to walk forward with our willpower, we can receive great insights and realizations, and we can be part of this amazing, never-ending story. Or, you know, we can kind of sink into the muck like Atreyu's horse, who got stuck into the swamp of sorrow, or the zombies that wander the earth and don't know what they're doing here. So I challenge you to recognize that we are living in a world of enslavement. Mental enslavement is the main way enslavement is being perpetuated in the modern world. I wanted to mention, we've been watching something called The Rings of Power from the Lord of the Rings series recently. And the rings of power represent authority in this world. And people thinking that they can be a god, you know, that they can be as big as the creator or the great all, the great architect, they can do the power that only the great all, the great architect has, which is to give or take away life. The great circle, the great wheel of life is creation itself. And when man tries to recreate this, and we try to create life, but not in the divine way, like has been given to us through the unity of the male and the female, and the mental, psychological, and physical bond that happens, we can be part of this life creation process. But the forging of the rings in The Lord of the Rings and similar stories is about human greed taking over and trying to do something fantastical. Like in Fantasia, where the nothing has taken over, you know, and Atreyu is sent to guide himself through this first gate of bravery, of looking at this scary problem where he sees the whole world being taken over by the nothing. And he's been chosen as an emissary by the princess, who represents this care, you know, feminine care. She's just divine beauty. She's white light. She's young. She's like a child. They call her the childlike empress. And she's always dressed in white in her white tower, which symbolizes innocence and higher consciousness. And here is Atreyu. He is sort of an avatar of this kid Bastion in the other world, who's imagining, how do we get past all these problems in the world? And this is much like conversations we have with people who project their problems onto us and say, it's impossible to have a better world. We need government. We need slavery because there's psychopaths out there. And, you know, because there's these Sauron-type characters out in the world, that we need to have these rings of power. And, you know, Atreyu's mission is not one of violent conquest and cutting up with swords. His is an internal journey, and that's why I think it's such a great symbology for us. You know, this is a never-ending, everyday, every moment process that we go through of, you know, dual realities, you know, the good and the bad, the light and the dark, the day and the night, the two parts of ourself, the male and the female, the quiet part of ourself and the loud part of ourself, are always trying to work out these differences. This is our inner conscious, our inner being, our inner knowing. And when we conquer our inner beasts, and usually there's some sort of giving up or withdrawal that happens, or we lose something along the way, as when Atreyu passes through the mirror gate and the no-ki gate, he has to give up something, and we're reborn. And that's the symbol, the symbology of the phoenix. The birds can, in nature, are often symbols of something that brings us tidings or brings us news or leads us in a direction. Think about flight and the ability to fly. It's like our imagining. It's our an ability that we wish we had. But in the seashell of time, we see the shapes here, the reflection of the seashell and the snail's shell are also symbols of the movement of time, of a slow movement, slow changes happening. And I think this is something that gets in the way of many modern people's minds when they're looking about the big picture of things, is they see the immediate danger of the world we're in, or they see the problems, the obstacles, and they have trouble understanding that the principles are more real than the material world. This is something that was understood by many ancient philosophers on a deep level. And when we look at sacred geometry and the pillars of architecture and beauty in ancient buildings, like we talked about in the Kingdom of Heaven, we see that what's being really alluded to here and described here is our inner path, our inner knowing, and our inner realization. And I wanted to draw some parallels in this presentation to the importance of mathematics and music and beauty. And we can see that when mathematics are employed in building structures, like in pyramids or proportional structures, there is an incredible beauty. As in many of these ancient cathedrals and buildings and churches that we're not even completely sure how they were built or who did it. They always have leaves of nature, you know, combined with these long lines of beauty. And that's because these things mean something to us on a deeper level. They hit us on multiple levels, and this is something we've talked about called archetypes. Archetype shapes are embedded in nature, and shapes are also part of our own body's communication system and the universal communication system of all things. Have to do with shapes and how those shapes move and interact. So Atreyu passes through the first gate, and the first gate represents, you know, him coming up with that inner willpower to go up against something where he sees people getting destroyed in front of him. And he chooses to do what's best from a place of bravery and honesty. He didn't try to fight the sphinxes on his walk through that first gate. He just went right on through, hoping that, knowing that on a deep level, that what he was working towards was what's best for all. And if that's our path, I think we will find that we will see the more benign sphinxes who do not want to destroy us. When we're talking about the forces of the universe, we will be supported by the forces of the universe when we're doing the right thing. Now, that doesn't always mean that there's going to be a simple, easy outcome because of these rings of power that are already in place on the world. Much like in the never-ending story where the nothing had pretty much already taken over, this ring of power represents the authority in the world and the enslavement of humankind. Because this has been going on for many generations, humans have become very... they believe in this authoritarian rule. And what this does is the authoritarian rule devalues choices of the individual. The individual is enslaved by the laws that many other people have put together, or, you know, in our modern system of voting, you're so far from any decision making on the bigger process that your thoughts or ideas don't even really count, don't even play into the bigger scheme of how things are moving in the world. And this is a terrible dynamic because it is leading us in a terrible direction. I want to inspire hope to you, and I want to encourage you to consider something that I call the Golden Path. I'd encourage people to read the Dune series. Inside of the Dune series, there is a character called Leto. And Leto's the god worm emperor, and he becomes the emperor of the universe for like 5,000 years because he's this extremely powerful worm. And he describes something called the Golden Path, and he has in his mind's eye a vision for what would be best for humanity, and he tries to enforce it through his will. And although he does it in an authoritarian, strict rulership type of way, this picture represents us working towards the Golden Path on our individual mental concept of what we're doing in our life, and then working on sharing this mission and vision with others around us. Because the more humans that understand the reflexive nature of reality, in other words, the universe is watching itself. God is inside of you and outside of you and part of you, and you and God are looking at yourself, and we're watching ourselves learn. And many of the pain and karmic buildup of problems that have happened all through time are affecting us now. And there's no easy shortcut solutions to just jump right to a world of wonder and glory. But we need to start as soon as we can to imagine how do we get from where we're at right now, which is chaos, slavery of humans, mental enslavement largely, to a world where we love and care about one another, and we're very strict about people initiating harm, and they are stopped right when they do it. A big part of that is the self-defense principle. And when we look in many of this symbology, even of these archways, it really is really important to recognize, as in the ancient symbology of the stone cutters, the stonemasons, the two pillars represent on one side, the pillar of care, of non-aggression, and then on the other side, the pillar of self-defense, take no shit. So inside of nature, I love this picture here because it shows this drop. One tiny water drop is a super powerful symbol in nature. Think about how powerfully strong a drop of water is. It can withstand flying through gravity at intense speeds. A bubble coming up from the bottom of the ocean can handle all the pressure of the ocean. And we get this amazing reflection and rounded circular effect inside of the bubble of a drop of water that shows all of reality around it reflected. And this is very symbolic of our own life and our own existence, because we are also reflecting that which happens around us. And yet we also have this other ability that a raindrop doesn't quite have, to shine out our own light, to project our own imagination onto the world, and to possibly even change reality to some extent. And this egg shape that exists in the raindrop also exists in the creation of all life. The egg shape and every shape, for instance, affects us, because all these shapes are integrally part of the whole of the great all. We've talked about many times with the great all, or the tree of life that I have behind me, which represents our interconnectedness to all of reality. And all of reality is like a mirror that reflects itself. Now, what is the great nothing? The space around, outside of the great all, the part of the great all that is always changing and dying and being reborn like the phoenix into something new. I think the gates are also one way to look at these gates is our own personal discernment and realizations as we travel through life. We get to certain points and we think a certain way, and we reach a certain point where that way of thinking isn't getting us past things anymore, and we're finding ourselves stuck. And I'm curious if you experience what I experience in life, life will bring us back around over and over to the same type of problems or situations until we look at them clearly and find a solution. And we'll come back to the concept of the spiral, because this is the spiraling aspect of nature that we either ascend or descend. You know, when people start making terrible choices and doing wrong things, like for instance, when you tell a lie, it always leads to another lie, which leads to another lie, which becomes a downward spiral. You know, like when someone starts getting on worse drugs and they're not dealing with their depression or the anxiety and they're not eating right and they're not sleeping right, it becomes a downward spiral and it gets worse and worse. And this is the left-hand path. One can also gain much money in this world and power, like the rings of power, by taking that path of what works, but ignoring what's right. And at the end, you have a cumulative karmic buildup of problems, which at some point, the mystery mirror of the universe will force you to reflect on that. And it may be in this lifetime and it may not. Any one of us, it's very hard for us to discern exactly what's going on with other human beings. Our ability to connect with the divine only exists within our own self. One of the greatest examples I've come up with this is, imagine a serial killer who has just done the most heinous of crimes you can imagine. I don't even want to say out loud what this person's done. Murder, rape, kill, everything. The worst, right? This person gets done with doing all of the heinous crime and goes to a bar. And in that bar, this person is murdered by another person. Now, we would want to think that that other person who killed the psychopath, the killer of the psychopath, is a hero. But we don't know the heart of the killer. And it may be that the second killer did not even know that the first person was a psychopath and was also a psychopath themselves, in which case they weren't a hero. And only inside of the heart and mind of the person doing the action can ever really be discerned the complete truth. And that's between you and your maker, and you and your divine spirit and your divine spark. And that's why we have to be very careful about placing judgments on others, but being clear about understanding right and wrong from ourselves, so we know where to draw that line and when to employ self-defense. And that is what will prevent psychopaths from ruling the earth, is if these mirrors of time, these mirrors of reflection are everywhere. If we're all using our own mirrors and looking carefully at ourselves, we become very sure of, we get clarity for what's wrong. If we're hiding from the truth, as we are now, like even something as blatant as taxes or voting, where we're being coerced or getting a ticket, enforcing our will upon others through coercion, working for government jobs, purposefully stealing from other people, and not apologizing or asking for permission, just taking because we're afraid, because there's a system in place, because that's the way people have been doing it. When we keep following all these authoritarian ring of power style choices, we can't pass through the mirror gate because we're not really looking honestly at our mistakes and what we could be doing better. Although none of us are expected to be 100% perfect, in the end, the goal would be as close to perfection as we could get, which would mean not initiating harm on other conscious beings and not being part of those processes. And we can't change this whole thing all at once overnight, but what we can do is look deeply within ourselves. And let's use the metaphor of the mirror gate to look at how many people we see out in the world are stuck on their own ego, stuck on their own personal problems, and can't see that because of there's so many individuals that are so stuck inside of themselves and so isolated and alone, they're actually propagating the great nothing on the world around them by not knowing their neighbors, by not talking to other human beings, by not sharing their thoughts in their mind, by not opening their heart to the possibility that wrongdoing is being done on a mass scale. The great all knows, our divine consciousness knows, and somewhere inside of every being there's a knowledge. And if we don't face this knowledge of the power of making choices, the power of realizing our ability to say no, the power of our ability to teach others, to continue to learn, everything kind of goes up in smoke and becomes this nothingness, which is the world we're living. It's very zombie-ish. It's very much neighbors don't talk to other neighbors. Decisions are based on words already printed on a paper that are more important than your individual consciousness in the fantastic world of today's reality, which is like Fantasia. It's a created world that people have used their thoughts and minds and concentrated and focused into reality. The way reality works is it's a fractal, never-ending discovery of shapes and outcomes, and it allows us to choose as we please. It gives us ultimate freedom. And yet, that freedom can also be to create things of danger or harm to others versus creating beautiful gardens of joy and light that we could be creating. I want to inspire people that we could work towards a much brighter future. If we embrace, each of us, our individual journey and work wholly, you know, with a whole heart towards solving our own traumas and our own misunderstandings about reality, we can realize the incredible potential we have as humans to grow and evolve into more artistic beings and beings that are more skilled in the arts of self-defense that can shut down evil the moment it pops up its head. And if we're all doing this, we don't have to live in fear of the great nothing or this huge beast of Sauron's mechanical building of all these orcs, which is our modern world. Everybody goes to work. Everybody's working for the government or the military industry. They really don't believe in it deep down because they know it's wrong, and yet they keep doing it. So we need to be each learning, teaching, preparing our future generations of humans to understand that these three gates of realization are key to not just our own personal journey, but traveling through this second mirror gate is transcending the personal self and what I need and what my ego wants, my personal desire, and what can I do to be part of the bigger whole, the bigger all? What can I do to be part of God's reality and be on a journey that is worthy of the skin that I have been given, of the soul that I have inherited? See, this is a wonderful, powerful thing we've been offered here. We are the most modern version of humanity right now. Your body, your skin, your mind, your soul is the 5.0 version of the human body. And you have the opportunity right now to guide the future. We are the deacons of reality. We do affect reality. We don't control it. And those who think that they do or want to work on the path towards nothingness or evil, which actually are pretty much the same thing. If you were to look at the whole grand universe from the grand God perspective, evil wouldn't be such a scary thing. It's a natural part of reality that everything changes and everything dies and metamorphosizes and is reborn. And this is the process that reality uses to grow, to learn. And when we tap into this, we are part of the life process. We're part of the growing process. We're part of the realization process. And we can see graphed out in nature, we can see shapes. We can see triangles. We can see circles. All these shapes are pre-existing in reality, and it's up to us to not get lost in wealth and politics and scientism, but to look at the truth of the world as it actually exists, even if that is grim, you know, even if that is scary. You know, we see right now that there are people on this planet that are using other people as pawns. We see how, you know, I'd like to talk just for a minute about modern science. You know, many people look at modern science in a very text-based way, like they're reading the titles and they're interpreting things as they are told without doing the actual work of studying a thing. Science is having a theory and then testing that theory over and over and over until we get results. We can become scientists of symbology. We can become scientists of our own life and scientists of emotional and spiritual matters. We can see what happens when we do wrong in the world and how we feel and how it affects us. If we're honest, the great mirror of reality will show it in everything around us. All we have to do is have eyes to see and ears to hear. So to reflect on deeper metaphysical principles is our responsibility in this world. To defend truth is our job. It's not an extra thing, but this is actually why we're here, to continually work through the understanding of what is reality. Why are we here? Why do these terrible things happen? Why do good things happen? How do we be part of the change? Right now we have people standing on white towers, right? People acting as if they are innocent, and then they are signing pieces of paper or putting out edicts, laws, rules based on their supreme power of knowledge, which they don't actually have. It's a fantastical idea. A piece of paper, words on a piece of paper, should never be valued higher than the consciousness of a real live human being who's infused with the divine spark of the great all, of reality, of God, of whatever this is that we're part of. Our modern world puts so much power on the great nothing, which is fantastical ideas that humans have made up to control other humans. And, you know, a lot of times it gives us comfort to know that there's humans out there controlling other humans, so we don't have to do it, you know. But the truth is the responsibility to transcend the BS of this world and to find the commonality in principles and truth, which is something we can do. We can reflect, see these reflections in nature. We don't need to have these things written down because they are written on our heart. They're written in our soul. All one has to do is meditate or look closely at, look at music, look at sounds, look at waves. All these things reflect the same reality, that there's a great mystery. And as much as we can know and take apart, there's still going to be more to know. And the totality of it is amazing and fantastic and it's brilliant. But like if you take a flower and you cut off the petals and you examine the stamen under a microscope, you can understand more about the pieces and parts of flower. But when you stand back and look at it, it's no longer a flower. It's a cut up, messed up little thing and it's lost its beauty. So there's a balance between the right brain, the left brain, and finding our centered self that can analyze things, look at the mathematics, that can do equations and predictions and have concerns about the future, and yet also feel care and feel what's going on in the big picture in an intuitive. Comparing metaphors is one of these great things I like to encourage to people. When we look at anything and compare it to any other thing, it forces our brain to bridge a gap. And this process, learning how to do this process, what does the path represent in front of me? Does it represent my intention? Does it represent where I'm going in life? You can ask yourself these questions about everything you do. And what is your golden path? What is the best thing you could possibly do for yourself and for others? When you just get past that aspect of only yourself is when you've passed through the second mirror, the second gate. Many people will never get past the second gate because they're stuck in their own ego and their maybe their own problems, maybe their own failures. And there's something in their past or something about themselves they're not quite ready to face, so they can be stuck there for eternity. But seeing your place in the entire universe, in the entire world, standing back, looking at the bigger picture, recognizing the amazing gift you've been given, should inspire you to push yourself through this mirror and to ask yourself, with everything I've learned about myself, with all I know about who I am and things I do, what can I do to contribute to the bigger picture? How can I just get past my own problems and start working on a solution that helps not just me, but possibly my children, their children? you know, this is what the stars are inspiring us to do, and not the Hollywood stars, which are a fantastical, silly representation of the real stars of the heavens, right? And as we gaze in our imagination, one interesting thing about our imagination is that we can imagine things that don't actually exist. We can imagine things that aren't actually here. And one of those things we have imagined through time, and maybe it's been impressed upon us by external forces, is this idea that we can control one another, that we can force others to do things the way we say, when reality itself has set up a situation where that will never work. The harder we try to enforce our will on others and make other people, it just destroys life. It just creates trauma. And we're just going to have a huge pile of dead bodies at the first gate and, you know, a huge pile of confused people staring in the mirror at the second gate. So to work towards the fantastical reality that I'm describing, which could be not so fantastical, it involves each of us taking seriously this process of learning and teaching moral law and understanding that at the base foundational level, just like in Fantasia with its fantastic towers of beauty, the great nothing can eat up, you know, beauty. It can keep eating up beauty and keep eating up beauty. And beauty and life will never cease. They will always keep growing. And you can choose whether you want to be part of that nothingness process of complaining and dissecting everything and taking it apart and never putting it back together. Or you can back off and look at Fantasia as a reflection of the world you want to build. And how do you pick one little part of that and add color to it and contribute to the work that other people are doing? When you do this, when you surpass the great nothing, when you, the great nothing also symbolizes the fear of the unknown, right? The fear that someone's going to kill us, that there's some psychopath out there that wants to get us. And these things are true. There are Sauron-like entities and individuals in the world. And there is this force of what seems like the force of evil that people join that leads them down a path towards destruction. Stealing, murdering, raping, right? And this fear can project us into a place of cowardice, of hiding, of running away, of looking for someone else to solve the problem. But what we need to do is kind of refocus our eyes and find something in this great, grandiose world that we can do that, you know, we need to transcend our own limitations. And to do that, we need to discover what our personal limitations are, you know. There are moral fundamentals in this world, and we can recognize them. We can discuss them with each other. We can corroborate that reality. And we can see that in time, when we observe, people do feel the outcome of their wrongdoings, even though it's not like the movies where a brick just falls on somebody's head. Over time, people feel guilt. They feel sadness. They feel anxiety. But people that are working towards things they know to be good and they have a purpose and they leave a legacy behind, it's very obvious that they've done so. So that's your choice in the world. Which path do you want to go down? The path of, you know, working towards the better world? Or do you want to work in, you know, work for Mordor, work as an orc, building destruction and doom, which is what most of the world is competing to do at the current time, without recognizing that morality is reality. These symbols I have here, the great egg with the golden leaf, represents the divine aspect of reality, and that we are born into it. You know, the white silhouette is like our moment to exist on this plane, and it's provided by the great all, the reality itself. And it's a bit of a test, a learning process. You can see the growth of a person here represented symbolically like an egg that opens up. As a person grows, they get to experience the totality of reality, which is you know, I've symbolized it with an apple. An apple has been used in religious circles to represent, you know, the choices of good and evil, right? We bite into the apple is the tree of knowledge. But I've often noticed how all these shapes have similarities with this Taurus field. And ultimately, we do have a divine connection and ability to think about these things, to realize bigger thoughts, and to consider with our eye, you know, our inner eye, what is right, what is wrong, why are we here? When we talk about the harmful actions against conscious beings, whether it's theft, assault, rape, murder, coercion, deception, these things are fairly obvious that we can see the negative effects of them, and we can feel how our mind and body are affected when people do or don't do these things. I love this picture. I took this screenshot from the Library of the Untold. It's a YouTube channel I recommend to people, where it shows this one plane that says hypersurface of the present and the observer. And to me, this is a great symbolic way of looking at this time that we're spending in reality. It's not all of reality. It's just one slice in the Taurus field that we get to experience in a linear way. We get to experience life and reality one moment after another. And this is a learning experience. This is a school. These poles of magnetic interference can be seen even in studies of physics and quantum physics, which we're going to discuss in a later presentation. But we can see at the center of the egg, you know, the symbol of birth, like the chicken and the egg, right? And then the roots of the trees, how life will consistently grow and give opportunity and space. And the sign of the netter, the window into time, is also showing the space. These pictures I've drawn of the egg and the magnetic circles are to help us recognize that life begins as a very small electrical impulse, and it doubles, and it's amazing. It's fantastical, and it contains dual nature of reality, where things are sometimes true and not true in the same moment. And it makes it very difficult to discern it all. But like the apple in the glass apple here, we are truth inside of itself, trying to see itself. And we are this kind of like a pause in time where we get to experience what happens when we do or don't do things. And then the nature of reality reflects back to us how that works out, and it works this out for us in the infinite spiral of time. And I talked about the spiral and the importance of the spiral, and what I'm talking about here is growth process. Starting from innocence, the childlike empress, you know, like when we are born into this world, we're only given our senses and our perceptions. And then as we grow, we have the ability to understand things on different levels, to pass through these gates of understanding, to experiment with the shapes and the feelings around us and the relationships. We pass through doors of life from a young person into adulthood where we're expected to make our own choices and be responsible for them. And this is where we are given this opportunity to choose our path. And yet in the modern world, this path, what I'm calling our golden path, is often refined and limited by the great eye of those in power from the last generations. And many of those folks have got into these places of power by choosing deception, by choosing lies, by choosing coercion. And we're standing at the door of reality. What do we do with this when we're enslaved and we see that the powers that be have chosen the wrong path? You know, we have to pass through that no-key gate, and it requires a certain level of trust in the universe and understanding that good will proceed, right? It's a question of what do we do with our time here? And however overwhelming it may be to see all the problems in the world and to see the slavery happening around us, we still have to find a way to walk forward with some positive, optimistic hope towards what we can do with our time. Otherwise, we get sucked into the nothing, or we just become a zombie-like orc who does the bidding of the evil ones who are in charge. So what can we do? We can communicate with one another. We can become scientists in our own right. We can study reality. We can speak truth. However difficult it is, you know, walking through that first gate of the Sphinxes staring at us, that's the balance of looking at the danger of our reality and the fears we have in our mind about what could go wrong if we choose the moral path, if we choose the golden path, and be born, reborn as beings, fully alive and fully excited to grow into whatever form that takes, whatever sacrifice that might be, to reach the other side of the gates of learning. And, you know, that every good thing comes with a certain amount of sacrifice. Every travel we take, every adventure takes energy. We have to reach a mountaintop. We're going to get tired. You know, we're going to get a blister on our foot. To make these realizations, we have to put in serious time. We have to do research. We have to talk to one another. We have to be wrong sometimes, right? But one of the treasures I wanted to share with you folks in symbology and nature, whether it's the sun or the waves or the ocean, all these symbols, the triangle, they can be used to understand greater principles. The smallest thing represents the biggest thing. The box and the cube is a symbolic representation of being a human in nature. We have this squarish way of thinking. We build things at 90 degree angles because it's easier, you know, we can mathematically figure them out. This is our logical left brain self, which is important and very useful for creating like a cornerstone of a building. But if we want to work towards the beauty of a holistic view of things, we have to transcend that square box and start to see the infinite nature of reality that wraps back around itself, the snake of time. And, you know, how do we heal ourselves? How do we heal our own traumas? How do we allow past traumas not to lead us into the temptation of taking revenge, of hurting others in the ways that we've been hurt? How do we find that golden path and work towards a future that is enduring for all beings? It's not easy. It's a daily process, and there's always going to be a new struggle every step of the way. And sometimes it looks very bleak and we feel very alone. There's no one around us who seems to understand our point of view. But if you've walked through that first gate, you know you have courage. You know you've seen truth for what it is. And then that second gate, if you've gotten past your own egoic holdups, or if you're putting your heart into doing that, the third gate will then open for you. And the third gate is, I like to think about the luck dragon. You know, the luck dragon showed up for Atreyu because his purpose and his path was pure. He was doing it for what's best for everyone. Even if some part of him liked being a hero, he let that all go when he passed through those gates. And the luck dragon just showed up. And at times when he was at his worst and he thought the mission was over and he'd failed his adventure, the luck dragon showed up and flew him to the next spot. So it's an important recognition that in this crux of reality, in the space of time that we're in, once you start to make moral choices and to set a path for yourself of intention, of clear intention, the universe has a way of opening doors for you. And that is what the no-key gate represents. The serendipity nature of reality that is full of synchronicities. And these synchronicities, if we don't get carried away with them, again, there's a balance to the left and right brain, but to recognize them, to see them, to listen to them, to let them soak into our feelings and then combine them with our left brain structured thoughts and find the happy medium, find the balance between them and allow ourselves to be wrong. And re-raise ourselves in, like the phoenix, from the waters of the deep, to recognize that this world, this reality, is made of our choices. And what we do with them will create the reality for us and others in the future. Our power to alter the future lies within our ability to think, to imagine, and to create ideas. It is this act of philosophizing. The thoughts, once abstract, begin to manifest. We can see this process mirrored in the structure of our universe, and we can practice it in our own trivium practice of gathering information and then discussing and processing that information and then putting it out. As the trees put out leaves, we can put out works of beauty in art that reflect that same beauty of nature with veins of truth and rays of light of understanding for others to grasp, and food for the soul of others to understand deep down. This is what I've been feeling all along, but no one has said it. When you speak your voice with truth from your heart, it allows others to awaken their inner soul as well and to be inspired. Inspiration comes from fear sometimes of what we don't want, but by working on that fear, by facing our fear, is how we create the new leaf of life. Not by giving up, not by just waiting, you know, for the leaves to fall, but by being the leaf, by growing, by reaching out for the sun, trying to find the rays of light, by not being deceived by the eyes of power that exist in the world now, even if they are alluring and they seem to act as if they're going to solve every problem. We need to look deeper at, you know, the reality of life and the reality of nature. And what has truly been given to us is the opportunity to fill our own tourist field of energy, to put out into the world thoughts and ideas that contribute to reality, so that we then get this luck dragon of time to aid us and be with us on our journey to open doors of light, to help people see a path that does not require stealing and murdering other people, right? Just like the waves of the ocean, there's a cyclical nature to reality, and I think nature can survive with or without our input. But just like the beach is there long before we were and long after we leave, even if we blow the earth to crap, there still will be water, there still will be oceans, and there still will be trees that will regrow without us. But we have an opportunity to be part of this process and to encourage the lifelike aspects and to avoid the dangers of stealing from others. We can see in from, as I said before, in seashells to oceans, the same patterns in nature. The same colors and shapes emerge in all things, and the same reality of truth and objective moral rightness or wrongness exists in all people and all times, whether it's cities or forests. These same dynamics will emerge, just like the shapes of plants and trees that emerge consistently in the forms and shapes they do. And we can appreciate these forms and shapes and find inspiration in them of how to organize ourselves in a similar way. I am sure that just like the bees and just like the shapes of the trees and the leaves as they form, that we as humans can find systems of organization that do not require coercion. We can see in the animal plant world many times how this is done as examples, and we have higher consciousness and ability to think of a plan. And what doesn't work consistently is one human trying to rule over other humans or coming up with an idea or a thought that forces other people to do things the way that they want to do them. And that is the key component of natural law, is that we are experiencing the outcome of other humans and our own actions in the world. And that is the cumulative experience we are having. And if we see nature around us becoming more volatile, and we see humans around us becoming more volatile, and we feel this end of times thing, you know, coming, it is an urging coming from within us, coming from within nature, telling us it's time to take positive action, to work towards the good, to balance ourselves. And before we finish this presentation, let's talk a little bit about the Orin in the story of the Neverending Story. The term Orin in the novel is a made-up word that has no specific meaning. The name is derived from the Latin aurum, meaning gold. It's a key element in the narrative to represent magic and imagination. In the context of the story, it has no exact equivalent. Well, it does. There is the Ouroboros, which is very interesting. We'll talk about that more in a future presentation. But you might want to look up Chiron, the Greek mythology centaur, who was the wisest and justest of all centaurs. To me, the Orin represents the infinite cyclical nature of reality, and that the actions and choices we make always lead towards those outcomes. And what we're experiencing in the world is the engulfing of the world by the great nothing. And so for us, finding that childlike empress, the innocent part inside of ourself, who's willing to be completely honest and look at reality for what it is, we should be holding this Orin as responsibility, just like Atreyu, to go out in the world and create our own never-ending story, to work towards how do we solve this problem without doing evil upon others, without forcing people to lose their choices and their options, just like we wouldn't want done to us. So, you know, this possession of this Orin in the story, coming from the innocent childlike empress, going to the character in the story, which is Atreyu, which represents our journey through the gates of life. But ultimately, it winds up in the hands of Bastion, the young child. And, you know, the evil ones out there in the world, the Satanists, they say, do what thou wilt, which means do whatever you want. And he tackles this idea in this book. And some people interpreted the never-ending story, some of the words on the Orin, to mean do what you want, which was intentionally ambiguous on N's part, according to this writing here. The director wanted the inscription to be do what you dream. But Michael N. did not like this. And he said, do what you dream. He said, this inscription is really the opposite of what the message of my book means. To was du willst, he only forgets, although I told him, that the sentence originally came from English, namely by the writer Aleister Crowley. And there it says, do what thou wilt. Do what thou you dream is Peterson's interpretation, and it's the wrong one. It's precisely the error that Bastion is subject to and why he cannot find his way back from Fantasia. He thinks at first it's about doing what he wishes, doing what he wants, to find one's true will. And he does not, it does not all mean doing what you want. The formula goes back to St. Augustine, and you can't do what you want, your true will, either. You'll only find it there. It only leads you back to the human world. So what I interpret Michael N's statement here to mean is that it's more about discovering what the will of the universe is, and how do we fit into that? How does my adventure, my story, fit into what's best for the great all? The great authority is the great all, and it's not going to just point you in a direction and say, hey, go through that gate. But it does offer many, many stories, allegories, and endless realizations that you can make. But it's up to you to take that journey, to decipher and discover and learn to see these gates in everything you do. You can learn to use the trivium process or the quadrivium process. You can learn to be reborn in your own thoughts, to not hold on to things so tightly that you can't look at them honestly and see where your mistakes might lie. You can work towards a better future for yourself and those around you. You can teach and learn and struggle with the difficulties of this process so that when you do come to that place of facing Ma'at and the great feather of weighing your heart, will you be able to say you did the right thing? Will you be able to say that you chose the path, the golden path of what's best for all, truly? Will that last gate open for you? It's up for you to find out. So that's the end of the presentation, but I wanted to share some awesome contributions. If you're not in the One Great Work Warrior Telegram chat, I highly recommend you join that. It's a place where people have been doing a lot of great contributing. And I wanted to share a couple posts I saw in there. I think Inner Warrior was posted by Derek, and that is, have patience with yourself. Nobody ever got better overnight. You'll get wherever you need to be in time. For now, remember that every day that you survive is a step forward. And you have survived many tough days that you thought wouldn't pass. Be proud of yourself and keep going. You're more powerful than you think. Wake up and realize your inner warrior. Healers, this is a post, I think it was Alpha Vuk who shared this. I also have some things that were shared by Oscar. And thank you guys who are contributing. Theo is a great contributor. Derek, Jerry, all you people that are doing work in the One Great Work Warriors, Marvin, Brandon Spencer, and Jim Adams, all you people that are showing up, Crip Rick, and doing this work are contributing to the future, a better future that we're working towards. Healers are spiritual warriors who have found the courage to defeat the darkness of their souls. Awakening and rising from the depths of their deepest fears, like a phoenix rising from the ashes. Reborn with the wisdom and strength that creates a light that shines bright enough to help, encourage, and inspire others out of their own darkness. Here's a post from Oscar. Hermetic principles in relation to the body. The neurons in our brain, the mentalism in the concept of mentalism, the hermetic principle of mentalism. The hermetic principle of correspondence we can see in our arteries and veins. The tunnels that travel, all through those tunnels travel the symbols that our body is sharing with us on how to relive and revive and heal ourselves. The hermetic principle of vibration we can see in our pulse, our heartbeat. The hermetic principle of polarity. In the circulatory system, there's an in and an out, and they're very different. One does not work with the other. You know, this is a rhythm of life or death. Life and death, day and night, in our lungs breathing in and out, the ocean crashing in and sucking back out. This is polarity. And it is also the reflective nature of reality, up and down, left and right. There's always two wings to every bird. And then he talks about the hermetic principle of gender, which we see in our digestive system and our gut biome, causality. You know, you put different things together and you get different results, chemical reactions. We can see gender, as I discussed also in this presentation, in that strong masculine box, squarish part of ourself that wants to find 90-degree angles and straight lines in things and no left from right, and then our more right brain, intuitive self that feels our way through things and recognizes patterns and metaphors. Being warrior is a mindset. I think these were from Vuk. Thank you for your contributions for this episode. Be it, see it. Being a warrior is a mindset. The basic difference between an ordinary man and a warrior is that a warrior takes everything as a challenge, while an ordinary man takes everything as a blessing or a curse. That's Carlos Castaneda's quote. And you could say it with a woman. The basic difference between an ordinary woman and a warrior is that a warrior takes everything as a challenge, while an ordinary woman takes everything as a blessing or a curse. It doesn't matter if you're male or female, these truths apply wholly to all of us, especially in this time of extreme moral danger and evil and the nothingness being the majority taking over this world currently. Warriors confront that evil that most people refuse to acknowledge, Bodhi Sanders. So here's Alpha Vuk's, here's a kind of the truth, the hard truth that we have to recognize. Humanity has its head up its ass right now. And so it's up to you and me and Alpha and Derek and everybody else out there listening, Brandon, everyone, every wonderful One Great Work warrior out there, to help with this process of, you know, not being evil, of not being wrongdoing, of learning to do what's right. of learning to care about what's best for all. And this is an ongoing process that we all have to continue working on. It's not easy, but I hope that this inspiration, that this discussion gives you some sort of hope for the future, that there are other people working on this project, and that we can have a better future. And thank you for listening. Check out endevil.life. If you haven't signed up yet to the email list, please do that. There's a little button you can push on endevillife or chrisjansen.com. And if you haven't yet joined the One Great Work Warriors, you can find the link to the Telegram chat that's along with all the One Great Work Warriors videos. And subscribe to the YouTube channels and share the work with others and be inspired to start doing the work yourself. If you have questions, connect with us, those content creators out there that are talking about natural law and freedom, and we will do what we can to help you out, help you get going. Thanks so much, friends, for joining me on the nature of symbols and the symbols of nature.